Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to an absolutely stunning night in Paris where you find us sipping beers on the corner of Philippe Chatrier Stadium after a stunning day of tennis. David's here. Hello, David.
Hello. Yeah, I'm drunk and I'm not drunk on the beer. I'm drunk on the tennis.
Matt's here. Hello, Matt.
Hello. Women's semi-finals day is becoming a great day at a slam. We've had some great ones recently, and today was up there.
Yeah, they tend to deliver, don't they, these days. It's a joy, as is the fact that 1977 mixed doubles French Open champion Mary Carrillo is here. Hello, Mary.
I'm drunk on the tennis and partially drunk on my second beer. So nice to drink.
You two beers candidates.
Yeah, Mary exactly. Came to the interview room with a beer in hand, and I knew she was ready to pod.
She's this isn't the first rodeo.
It really has been just an absolutely sensational day of tennis. And Mary, the fact that you're here and that you are a mixed doubles champion here makes it feel legit for me to lead with the mixed doubles final that we had first up today.
How great and was that?
One of the stories of the tournament, Miyu Kato, not quite sure on that. I've been saying Kato all week, but lots of other people are saying Kato. Anyway, and our new friend Tim Putz, whose name we have confirmed been butchering all week,
yes.
And that news is courtesy...
Putz is not a putz.
That news is courtesy of Matt's mum. Mm.
Really?
Yeah. I woke up to a message. Matthew...
So, you were spoken to.
I was.
So Miyu Kato, Tim Putz beating Bianca Andreescu, Michael Venus 4-6, 6-4, 10-6. Just the ultimate story of redemption, Mary.
The
it's
ultimate
incredible.
Story of redemption. I was a little surprised that she just kept banging on in her acceptance speech. She used the word disqualified, I believe it was 47 times. And she wants her money back, she wants her ranking. I thought she went a little overboard there. But I was very happy to see that she was resilient. Obviously, good old Putz is a good guy and carried her through when she thanked her. How about when she thanked her coach for standing by her in these difficult days?
It really got me, Mary.
Did it? Were you getting jammed
up? You might have found the 47 times a little too much, but I was sailing down on that sea with her. I was all in on the emotion of that redemptive arc. You had Tim Putz holding the microphone for her because she had pre-written this speech.
She had things to say.
Would she have
said
them?
She used the D word quite a bit.
She did. So yeah, she had this piece of paper. So Tim had to hold the microphone for her. It was a lot.
It was lovely,
wasn't it? And the fact that she was quite literally carrying that throughout the final, this pre-written speech. Would she have delivered it? Had they lost the final? We'll never know.
Yes. I think she would have. I think she's still talking about it.
She said, it's been really challenging mentally for me in the past few days due to the unjust disqualification from the women's doubles to Roland Garros. It's unfortunate about the disqualification decision. But I'm looking for a positive outcome of my appeal so I can receive my points and prize money. Mm. I'm just pleased there is an appeals process for this kind of thing.
Yeah, there should be.
Absolutely. So, congratulations to Kato and Putz, the mixed doubles champion.
How does it feel?
Champions.
Winning the mixed doubles.
Let me just tell you something. Mixed doubles at the French Open is the single most difficult of all of the events.
Yes. Especially when you have to play with him. You know.
Yeah. I mean, if you can win that, if you can win it here,
You can win anything, anywhere.
Exactly.
And Miyu Kato's done it without John McEnroe.
That's also true. No, that was lovely. That was and then our guy, our junior sensation, not even Australian, but still a sensation.
Darwin.
He came through again. It's a 15-year-old who's... he could win the whole junior title.
He's into the semis now. Yeah. He's beaten four players 2 or 3 years older than him. Mm. That's a big deal, right?
That is, because he still looks cultish, you know? Mm. He's still kind of gangly, and you know when a horse is born, and they try to...
It's all legs.
It's all legs, and and they're fuzzy, you know? That's kind of what he looks like now, but... He's got the goods.
You've created a monster here, Mary, because Matt's going to be able to say, you know, when Darwin Blanche is going for his 24th Grand Slam title for the all-time record, Matt's going to be able to say, I was there.
He does have that look about him, doesn't he?
He looks smug already.
Yeah.
Mary, we interrupt this broadcast for news of Matt's sponsor.
Yeah.
Have you been thinking, Matt's a stylish guy? I'd like to look like Matt.
Hourly. I always think that, yes.
Well... This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Wilson, providers not only of much of Matt's wardrobe, but also of the official ball of Roland Garros. The Wilson Roland Garros tennis ball is designed specifically for the famous clay courts of Roland Garros.
And for Matt.
Boasting his game has improved leaps and bounds recently.
He's been taught about spacing by Pam Shriver.
Boasting a court designed for longer rallies. And felt that limits moisture and dirt pickup for peak consistency during grueling points. And I'd say, spoiler alert for what's to come, those balls did a darn good job today.
It did.
The Wilson Roland Garros ball produces performance fit for the zenith of the clay court season. Mm. In addition to equipment provided for the tournament, Wilson and the FFT have a range of co-branded premium Wilson Roland Garros products that combine elegance and high performance, including tennis balls, rackets, string, tennis bags, and accessories. You have just what that is, that's the royal you, but Mary, you are welcome to enter. Have just one more day to enter a free prize draw to win one of two amazing Wilson prize packages on offer for Tennis Podcast listeners. The prize includes one Roland Garros bag for 9 rackets. That's a lot of rackets. I mean, Arina Sabalenka presumably has a bag for 9 rackets, and still she needed external rackets handed to her on the court today for reasons unknown. One Roland Garros edition racket, either a Blade 98 or a Clash 100. One pack of Luxilon Roland Garros string. 2 cans of Roland Garros clay court balls. So to be in with the chance of winning this amazing pack of Wilson gear, click the link in our show notes or tomorrow's newsletter and enter before 5 p.m. UK time on Friday the 9th of June. I'm sure there'll be nothing else going on at 5 p.m. UK time tomorrow. Nothing at all.
Wait, does Matt really have a Wilson scam? Or does he just wear it for...
Mary, I don't know if you've just been listening, but we all have a Wilson scam.
We all have a Wilson.
It's just that Matt carries it off better than the rest of
our beers.
Yeah.
There we go.
But Matt... Wow. Matt particularly embraces being kitted out in Wilson gear, and we all love it.
It's all he wears.
We will announce the winners of that prize draw after the men's singles final on Sunday. Right. And it is going to be awkward if it's my dad.
Especially when we tell him he's disqualified because of relationships.
It's across that bridge when we come to its situation.
Wait, may I
ask? He can prepare a speech, Kato style.
Before we talk about today's magnificent tennis, you had put up one of your... cockamamie pole things.
Yep.
About can you acquire fangs or must you be?
Yeah.
What? How have the dramatic results been coming through?
I would say let's just rewind and clarify that it was you that put me up to it.
Well,
which I did. And
we used to be friends, Mary.
Sorry about this.
I think the majority. I think last time I looked, and I do look daily. 75%. Of people thought you can acquire fangs. You don't need to be born with them in order to beat people when just your tennis strokes and your physical fitness isn't doing the job for you, and you need to get your fangs and sink them in, and you know, that was the view of the 75% of people. What do you think?
I guess fangs can drop. I don't know. We've had this discussion on and off for years now, haven't we?
But teeth that drop are always there, right? They're always
there to begin with.
It's just when they...
They're in your jaw somewhere.
When they manifest.
So where does Taylor Fritz he's our test case because we were so impressed with the way he shushed the crowd and won.
Yes.
Admittedly, then lost the next match, but still. What,
let's not ruin the storyline.
What's your view?
I think he's got fangs. I do.
Okay.
Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt this Thursday.
I think we will be revisiting this. I think it's a worthy, much as the poll can bog off, it is a worthy discussion point for today, re-Karolina Muchová.
Exactly.
Who we're going to be talking about in great detail because she is a Roland Garros finalist. After 3 hours, 13 minutes of battle, she defeated Arina Sabalenka 7-6, 6-7, 7-5, coming back from match point down from 5-2 down in the third, winning 20 of the last 24 points to beat the reigning Australian Open champion.
24?
And every single moment of that match was a true and utter joy.
Yeah,
I mean, don't let anyone tell me different.
It's got to be one of the matches of the year. And all the way through the first two sets, I commentated on one of them. Just occurred to me that they're playing well at the same time here, all the time. And it was uplifting. It was just, I felt great watching it. I felt great to be at a tennis tournament and seeing them take the stage and just plant their flags and go for it. You know, it was extraordinary tennis from start to finish because I don't feel like, okay, in the third set, I'm curious to know what you all think, whether Sabalenka threw it away or whether she choked it away was taken from her, because I didn't see that part of the match very closely. But first two sets, Sabalenka did what she does, and it's a measure of how good Muchová must be to withstand that and turn it back on her.
Yeah, I mean, Sabalenka plays about the biggest big babe tennis you can possibly play. And for two sets, there wasn't much between them. But then I think she definitely went away big time in the third. She let that one go. I mean, yes, Muchová won it, but I also think Sabalenka lost it, right?
There was a fantastic line, actually, from Muchová in the press conference when she was asked exactly that question. Very sensitively, I can't actually quite remember who asked the question, but that was the question. Did you win it or did your opponent lose it? And she said, Arena handed me an opportunity, but I was waiting for that opportunity.
There you go.
5-2.
Her senses were there. Mm. At some point in this game, she gets tight. You know, I'm not talking about the match point because that came on Muchová's serve. I'm talking about Arina Sabalenka serving for the match at 5-3. She knew at some point in this game there's going to be a moment. There's going to be a moment and I have to be ready to seize it. And, Sabalenka handed her that moment. She played a terrible game. Mm. But Muchová was ready for it.
We love Muki.
What do you love about her?
I love Muki because she's so calm. She's so stylish. I'll tell you a story. During the COVID US Open a couple of years ago, I had all my notes and we were far from being on the air, but I was up in the wax seats where the world feed happens, right? I mean,
on your own.
I was just sitting there like an idiot, you know, 8 hours before match time. And you know what, Arthur Ashe Stadium is huge, right? Yeah. So the world feed, we're way up in the sky, in the clouds. I mean, honestly, just about 15 feet above us are the snipers that have been at the top, at the lip of Ashe Stadium since 9/11. So I'm watching, and you know how sometimes you're just watching form. You're just watching someone hit, you know? But I'm looking at this player, and she's making this hard game look so easy and so smooth and so stylish. And I couldn't tell who it was because, you know, I was in outer space. So, again, it was COVID. There was no one in the stands. There's no one watching this practice. So I made my way down, and she's just playing this glorious game, and I thought, oh my god, it's Muki. I mean, Muchová, we've seen her so little. Obviously, we talk often about how injured she's been and I just was, it was mesmeric watching her from up close. And it's just such a joy to see that she's fit enough and she's so calm, right? She doesn't give much away. She had one bad bounce in the match and she looked a little cranky. And that was it. You know, in the meantime, Sabalenka was, you know, barking and, you know, screaming and getting aggravated and switching rackets. And I just think her game is, it's a little bit, and I'm not terribly religious, but it's how I feel about when I watch Carlos Alcaraz play. I think those type players, I think when they play, it pleases God. Just the way they approach it, the way, how much it means to them, how much they figure out how to hit a tennis ball.
That's interesting because I'm not terribly religious at all, but I was thinking, oh my goodness, while I was watching this match, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to try and sum this up on a podcast later. I'm not worthy of doing that. So I was trying to think of words. Mm. I was trying to think, plunder your vocabulary here, Catherine. What words can you think of to do this justice? And ethereal was the word,
yes,
I came up with for Karolina Muchova. There is such... It's like she's floating around the tennis court.
That's exactly right.
And there is... I said to you when we were just... You know, in our moment of Muchova Appreciation Society on WhatsApp earlier, there is power there. Mm. You know, she's not a Kazakhina. It's not all about the wizardry. There is some power, but there's also this incredible softness, and that combination just I feel it in my soul.
Figure skatery, maybe?
Absolutely, David.
I did used to love figure skating. I used to love watching that at the Olympics.
It is a bit figure skater-y. Yeah,
and I just, that's what I think of with her. She does seem to sort of...
You know those figures... Seeing as you've led us down this path, David, I'm going to... Just talk amongst yourselves for a moment. Mary and I are going to talk about figure skating.
I love
You know those skaters, and I was not one of these, that they land the jumps as if they're just landing on a mattress. You know, they're rotating four times in the air in the space of 0.2 seconds, and the landing looks like absolutely nothing. Like, there's no stress on the joints. It's just floating down on a cloud. That is how Muchova looks when she's dancing around a tennis court.
Yeah, that's my Muki.
So why did Sabalenka capitulate, implode?
Well, she's done it before in major semifinals, and I was thinking maybe she's grown out of that. Maybe the Australian Open has changed her as a player, and we've seen it all year. Sabalenka has been great in big moments, but I don't know. I think, as was it Federer said on court once, those demons are always lurking, and how much can you really change as a player? And I think she's changed a lot, and that's led her to winning her first Grand Slam title. But it is still in her to produce a sort of whirlwind of unforced errors, and that is exactly what this was. I mean, it was quite alarming how dramatically she lost her game. I was, you know, we often talk about how it's actually sometimes quite pleasing to see when a player is gutted in a post-match press conference. And I thought, how gutted is Sabalenka going to be after this major semi-final loss compared to her other ones, now that she's at least got that first Grand Slam title? Is that going to make up for things? And I just was quite encouraged by the fact that, no, she was still gutted by this. She's hungry for more than just one. And I think she knows she let that slip today. As good as Muchova was, and I was struck by the time Muchova had on the ball compared to, you know, we watched Sabalenka rush Sloane Stephens the other day, but Muchova, with her hands, her game, she had time against Sabalenka. But Sabalenka got that match in a position where she could win it. She had separated herself, she had lifted, and she imploded. She really, really did in those last games. Muchova was there. She capitalized. But Sabalenka let that slip at the end. It was
And I think alarming. If you are a power merchant and things start going wrong, you tighten up. Plan B is hard to find.
Right.
Because you want to hit your way out of trouble, don't you?
And she's been so good at bringing it back this year, but not really by doing anything differently, just by bringing herself together. And today... she just couldn't. It was so sudden and so fast, that plot twist at the end. Like, I was ready for Sabalenka in that final, and suddenly she was walking off the court the loser.
Matt's being very generous there with it. It's actually me that that wants to see players be absolutely gutted after losses. I always go into press conferences just to look in the whites of their eyes and see how distraught they are, because
you want them to rend their garments.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, part of that is that press conference room I shared with you back before COVID and all of that schmozzle. With Simona Halep in 2019, when you asked her, do you think you're too happy? And that was obviously before a tournament. That wasn't after a loss. But I do think there is, you know, the general concept of too much contentment, too much everything's okay, whether I win or not.
Yes. She had won the French, I think. And now we were talking pre-Wimbledon.
Yes, exactly.
And she was too damn happy. Yeah. You don't like to see that.
Yeah, and I'm now, subsequent to the soft launch of Stefanos Tsitsipas and Paolo Badosa's relationship on Spotify yesterday. I don't know if you're across this, Mary.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
I'm now
that you have.
Now hearing some subsequent sort of backdated speculation that maybe Stefanos Tsitsipas is too happy.
Oh, God damn him. Mm. Ah, he fell for that, huh?
That it wasn't anything to do with Alcaraz. It was just, you know, too happy launching his relationship on Spotify.
Yeah, that's love schmuff, as my father always says. That's thanks, Dad. That's what you're teaching us?
We're going to talk about Iga Świątek in a moment, but I'm just going to put it out there because I know the casual tennis fan is going, oh, it's not Świątek Sabalenka in the final. This is for the casual, a tougher sell. We know that. We know that Karolina Muchová she's our story, isn't she? As the diehard hardcore. We're trying to tell you, everybody else, why you should care about Karolina Muchová. But I get it. It's not the headline story. But I'm going to put it out there.
Go ahead.
I think she's, at the very least, making this final hugely competitive. I think she has a serious chance against Świątek.
I agree, because I think whilst her game might not be exactly the same as Elena Rybakina, I just think of them in the same breath. Came along at the same time. I think they have similar potential. It's just that one of them's been injured all the time. And I think that Muchová's game can handle anybody's game to be close, to at least be close. It's, will she be able to handle the moment, you know, when she gets out there? I kind of think she will, because she just seems to have quite a slow heartbeat out there. She doesn't look like she's getting too wound up.
Right.
And I think that she can ease her way into the game. The thing is with Świątek is she's trying to make it quick, and she's trying to rattle through the points like Steffi Graf used to, and you're 6-2-2 love down before you know it, and you're not playing best of five sets because of this stupid system. So, you know, there's not time. But I think Muchová can just slow that down a bit, and she can time the ball back, and she can turn it round on her, and I think she will stay with her.
You aren't worried about the fact that it looked like she was referring to her right thigh towards the end of that match?
Okay, well, I didn't know that.
She was cramping.
In press afterwards, she said that was cramping. Mm. And my initial reaction to that was, oh, phew, she's not injured.
Ah.
But yes, I'm always worried about Muchová and her physical.
You know, there's no specific injury. She's not going to show up taped for that final. But then my head went, oh, but she is exhausted. So that's not great. But I think overall,
or it could have been nerves. I mean, emotions will get you cramping.
Yeah.
As well.
Overall, I think it's good that there's not an injury, but it's obviously not ideal.
It's not ideal. Well, if she shows up with tape on Saturday, we'll know that. The thing about Sabalenka, and we talked about this a little bit, Matt. I mean, there have been quite a few players who have won one major in a row, you know? Right? And Sabalenka, she had all these looks to finish this thing off, and she didn't. And I still like that she's been playing the kind of tennis she's been playing this year, but when you get into that, 20 of the last 24 points you lost? The first rule of holes is when you're in one, stop digging, right? And maybe there's not a lot of nuance to this woman's game. So she doesn't have the options of, like, carving it back and sliding it around and legging it out. You know, she's not that. She doesn't want to be that player. So that's all the more reason why I'm glad that Muchová figured out a way to get off that court as winner.
I honestly can't imagine Sabalenka developing a plan B. Like, what would sort of, you know, reined in Sabalenka look like? Well, you know, thinking about tiebreak Djokovic, what would the equivalent for Sabalenka look like?
The only thing I can think of is to hit hard but go down the middle and bring the margins in a bit.
Okay.
You know, she's not going to start developing a slice and a moon ball tactic. I don't see that.
No.
But she could go more down into lockdown because she's actually technically really strong, it seems to me. She hits the ball really well, not just bashing it. She's in control. I just think she does get into that mindset of wanting of panic, of trying to hit her way out of everything.
Yep.
And maybe sometimes you've just got to pull that in. The final question I have, and I don't necessarily expect an answer to this because I don't see how we can give one, but that's a great lead, isn't it?
And I'll give an answer right now. 12.
Okay. Is there a chance that capitulation was due to the stress she has found herself under over the last week? With the press conferences, with the whole situation.
She denied that, right, in press? Didn't she say it wasn't that?
And I believed her. Mm. I don't think Sabalenka has a very good poker face. I don't think she's very good at just trotting out a party line. If she were, then she probably wouldn't have been in the quagmire that she found herself in with not coming to press. I think we talked about this earlier on in the tournament, didn't she? She's in her early press conferences, she was confronted with these very difficult questions, and Medvedev, for example, gets those same questions and he shuts them down elegantly.
Yes.
Without the journalist feeling like...
He has nuance.
Well, exactly. Whereas she sort of does a bit of shutting down but then keeps talking... And then somehow she's ended up at a destination that she did not put in the GPS.
Right, you know, and she can be disingenuous at times as well, which is...
Yeah. I believed her when she said that wasn't a factor. She said... And I do think that she, as we discussed, that last press conference when she came back to press, that went well. And I think that felt... cathartic for her in terms of turning that page. But
she was made to denounce Lukashenko, which is a very dangerous thing for a 25-year-old athlete to do, you know, in a country run by a despot. Like, I genuinely can't imagine her going back to Belarus anytime soon.
Is it fair for her to be put in that position?
I don't think so, honestly. Mm. We've talked about this already amongst ourselves. This whole thing has been so fraught and so stressful. It gets to the point sometimes, how unprofessional is this of me, but I almost want those players, like, I don't want to have to keep talking about them.
Yeah.
If they get beaten somewhere along the line, I'm like, oh, good, because I'm the only one in my booth who's going to bring it up. And I don't want to carry that burden all the time of trying to explain geopolitics in between points. It's stressful, right?
I think you might be in the wrong sport, Mary.
I'm positive I am.
Yeah, I mean, we feel the same.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, like I write the agenda every day and I'm like, peppy tennis chat. Mm. Oh, so just going to have to lead the show with some politics. No one wants to be doing that, but also it's our responsibility,
yeah.
I think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Iga Świątek.
Ah.
Two sets over Beatrice Haddad Maia, one fairly one-sided set, although it started off competitive. 6-2, I don't think quite tells the story of that set, although maybe it does. It's your classic kind of starts off competitive, Iga Świątek puts on the afterburners. Set two, entirely different story. I know on the last pod we were discussing Świątek, I said I wanted to see her in a third set dogfight, and I still that's still on my Christmas list if Santa's listening.
It felt closer
if Karolina Muchova's listening, but I feel like I saw something close to that today thanks to Beatrice at Admire.
Well, it was a second set dogfight and I love seeing Iga Świątek in that situation. You see it a handful of times a year. You might only see it once a year on the clay, and yeah, the bagels are great, but seeing her dig deep like that and seeing her come up with the brilliant shots that she's capable of, but when she really needs them.
Exactly.
That's what I really like to see, and that's what she did. I mean, Haddad Maia will want some shots back. The forehand volley into the net, 5-3 in the tiebreak, and then the forehand
set point. And she volleys well. She likes
right.
it up there.
Yeah.
They were tight shots, I think, but Świątek, you know, she still made Świątek come up with the goods, and that's more than what a lot of players are capable of. I've loved watching Haddad Maia this tournament. She brings a spirit and a determination to the court that not everyone can match, and for that set, she was right there with Świątek. It felt like she was in the middle of turning it into the sort of contest that she wanted.
I'm surprised Świątek got out of that match in straight sets.
Me too.
And did you see Guga was there?
Was
yeah.
he?
Gustavo Kuerten, the 3-time champion, was there cheering her on.
Oh, I love
26
that
years
so
to
much.
The day after he won his first French Open.
Oh, that's amazing.
The Googster was there.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about it, and we were also talking about Maria Bueno, because that great champion was also from Sao Paulo. I think it was Bud Collins who nicknamed her the Sao Paulo Swallow. She had a beautiful Mookie-like game. Oh, God. But yeah, she was right there in her face. She was in Świątek's face, you know? She believed she could win.
She was taking her best stuff in that second set. She was saying, come on, man.
She wasn't giving up the baseline, hitting like just big babe forehands all over. I mean, she was there. She was right there.
She was getting better and better, wasn't she? I was like, what would she bring in a third set? You know, because
exactly.
that's her thing, getting better as the match goes on. I wanted that. But
and that's why it was so impressive what Świątek did to get out of that set.
Exactly.
Because that was another side to her. That's why I'd be curious to know how much that sort of meant to her to do that. Scrabble.
I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Mary. This isn't a fully formed thought at all. It's just things that are floating around in my mind. And I just keep seeing, as I watch Iga Świątek, similarities between her and Djokovic. You know, it feels like winning is a need and a fuel. Winning is the end in itself rather than winning leading to happiness or joy, or, you know, maybe it will one day when they're retired and got their feet up and looking back on all their achievements. But it feels like
they're in a tunnel, aren't they? They are
exactly.
like hyper focused. to do what they're doing. I think a lot of people think Alcaraz is the favorite tomorrow. I'm not sure how you people feel about it.
Oh, we're there.
You believe that? See, I...
Well, no, I mean, we've arrived at...
We're already hyping that.
Destination.
Fair enough, but I like your comparison with Świątek and Novak. It seems like they are sacrificing so much to be who they are. Mm. But I got it in my head that Novak wants to win the Grand Slam this year.
Wow. Imagine. Just
and,
imagine.
And honestly, I that Olympic year in Tokyo, I was there. It was so damn hot. It was, Catherine, it was about the clammiest conditions.
Man.
You would have just, you would not.
Clammy doesn't work on me, Mary.
It was so damn hot. And obviously he wanted to win the Golden Slam, which has only been done by Steffi Graf. In 1988, but it cost him his U.S. Open, didn't it? It cost him, his final against Medvedev. So Nadal's not here. This guy's already won it a couple of times. He's the favorite for Wimbledon, right? Mm. He's a favorite for the Open, right?
Right.
I know everyone's on the Alcaraz, and I love that. I love that guy myself. But I still think 3 out of 5 sets with all of the. I think tomorrow's going to be absolutely fascinating. And I love Alcaraz. How can you not? There's nothing booable about that young man. But
oh, the French will find something, don't you think?
Okay, I retract my last statement. You're absolutely correct, Catherine. But I genuinely, what's not to like about whatever that outcome is, right?
Yeah.
Him getting his 23rd Novak. And in Rafa Nadal's on Rafa Nadal's
right.
court,
if he overtakes Nadal on Nadal's court,
imagine
we're all right. Okay, so then he goes into Wimbledon, which he's won 7 times now.
And wouldn't that be the most Novak Djokovic move?
Like, oh, it's his, so Djokovician. Yeah.
His thing is going into someone else's house and saying, "No, this is my territory."
And
he's beaten Federer,
destroying all the wedding gifts. Yeah, throwing a pottery around.
Beaten Federer in multiple Wimbledon finals, and everyone says Federer's the best grass court player. And he's beaten Rafa Nadal here multiple times. No one else has done that.
That's right. Twice he's done it.
He goes somewhere else and he sticks his flag down and says, "Don't forget about me." It would be symbolic if he did it.
It's like there's an unwritten rule in tennis that you can't talk about the calendar slam until someone's won 2.
I know, but I'm already putting my...
Especially as Djokovic always wins in Australia.
So correct.
And has never done the calendar slam before, as close as he's come. So it's like, I feel like if he wins this tournament, we'll go from 0 to 100 with the calendar slam talk again.
Right? I'm already there. You guys are in the semis. I'm putting that out.
Oh my God, can you imagine another US Open... With Djokovic, oh my God.
And the only time I've ever seen Djokovic cry on a tennis court and get a standing ovation is when he lost that US Open final. Remember on the last couple of changeovers, he was crying into his towel.
And that was fueled by the fact that calendar slam feels like you have one shot at this.
You better
in a lifetime. If he, even if he doesn't do it, if he just creates another possibility of doing it
at the age of 36.
Yeah,
everything
perfectly
is
perfectly
there.
Normal.
There's so much there,
but that that feeling of not last chance, but a small window. That's exactly how I feel about this match.
Right,
like Carlos Alcaraz may not have rivals in his future who are anywhere near the quality of Novak Djokovic. Like, who knows? We might. In 10 years' time, we might be talking about Alcaraz as sort of having not many rivals, really. We've got a small window now where this guy who feels like an upgrade from the future is is playing the best of now. And it's like, who wins that? And I feel like we should have seen it already over best of 5. And finally, we're getting it. And Djokovic talks about Alcaraz like I want people to talk about Alcaraz.
That's right.
Respecting him, but also, I'll show you, kind of thing to it. And
so this would be the changing of the guard. This would be the inflection point in both of their careers.
Right, I think so.
Mm. Are you going to make me say, what if it's crap again?
Two possibilities that I can see. Two additional possibilities, because I think Djokovic is going to show up at least for some of the match. Even if he had a slow start, I think he shows up and the way he manages five-set matches, and he will start to impose himself. I think there is a chance that Alcaraz could come out nervous and erratic and missing, because he's done that before, and he did it against Zverev last year, and he was two sets down, and we were like, where's the Alcarazmataz? You know, where has it gone? Why isn't it here? And then he turned it on for a set, and then he turned it on for another most of a set, and it looked like the fight back was on, and then the match was over. And I think that is possible. What I think is more likely is that he's going to come out and he's just going to be absolutely on fire from ball one, and he's going to take Djokovic by surprise, just how good he is now.
Really?
Because I think he's better than he was a year ago. I think he's awesome. And I think he's going to scare the living daylights out of Djokovic for a set. And
is Djokovic better than he was last year?
No, I think he's about the same. Mm. I mean, I don't think he's lost anything when he's at his best. When that set three against who did he play? Hachinov. Well, I mean, that was imperious. It was so, so good. But I don't think you can necessarily play that against this guy's best game. You know, what one bloke does is affects the other. And I think it's going to be competitive, but I think we might see Alcaraz steaming off into the distance before it gets competitive.
So wait, you three think Alcaraz wins tomorrow?
I do.
Wow. You're going there, Matt?
You know, I always go with the old guys. But
Matt,
Alcaraz
Matt
is different.
Is big three to the big fours.
Yeah.
Big three slash four to...
Yeah, it's my tennis core. DNA.
Until
he
discovered Carlos Alcaraz.
Alcaraz,
and then it
though.
Changed.
All right.
That's why I'm so excited about it.
And you, Catherine, where are you landing on this?
I watched highlights earlier of their match in Madrid. Mm. Their only one previous match, which I was lucky enough to watch from the best vantage point that I get in the sport, actually, is the presentation position that Amazon Prime are given at the Madrid Open, right
you
in
get
the corner
great
of
seats.
The court there. Yeah, that is the...
She doesn't even pay for
that. That is the best seat I think I've ever got, and I got to watch Alcaraz play Nadal and Djokovic back-to-back from those seats. And it was interesting. I had misremembered it. I had remembered that there was a tiebreak that Alcaraz won, but of course, ludicrous, Djokovic won the tiebreak. Of course, he wins all the tiebreaks. First set tiebreak and came back to win. You know, the difference that we see is most players, when they lose a tiebreak to Novak Djokovic, when he goes into... You fought tooth and nail to be in a set against Novak Djokovic.
You've played your best.
You've played your absolute best. You're like, it feels like a victory. I've got this into a tiebreak. And then he just slams the door in your face and makes you feel silly. And it's like, why did I expend all that energy? Why couldn't it just have been a 6-1 set?
Exactly.
What a waste. Usually it just crushes people when they lose a tiebreak to him. And this was a best of three match.
Mm.
It is different over
and
best
how many
of five.
Will it be tomorrow? Best of five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I realised that. But there was no let up at all when he lost that tiebreak to Djokovic. He came back better after a brilliant set already. And
so Mary, if it were best of three tomorrow, would you be backing Alcaraz? Like, is it the best of five? That
I think it's the best of five-iness of it.
Yeah,
I do. And again, I mean, age, there are so many different that's what's so fascinating about the semifinal. Like, what is going to count the most, you know? Is it his exuberance that wins this thing and his fearlessness? Or is it the fact that he's going to get a little sloppy over five sets and Djokovic wins? You know, that to me is fascinating. But again, I've got in my head that Djokovic, he sees in the absence of Roger, in the absence of Rafa, if he's going to, like, do something extraordinary this year... He's already done. He's already won his 10th Australian. I just have it in my head that he's thinking bigger than oh, I've got to beat this young upstart
in the semis. It's like the whole year is a tiebreak. You know, he's got that level of focus on every strand of it. Because, let's just put into perspective, if you did do that, imagine if you won the Grand Slam
this year, age
36, when he's level with Nadal, and he just streaked clear and won 25, having won the calendar slam.
Mira Andreeva would have to adjust her
projected tally upwards.
She said 25. Yeah.
How many has she won so far?
I lose count.
Yeah, and just picking up on something David said about, you know, sort of theorising about Sabalenka and just how much has been on her mind this tournament, and could that have contributed today? What has struck me about Alcaraz is how he has totally, I don't know, floated above any tension in this tournament whatsoever. Like,
or in the sport
generally. At all.
Nothing seems to
the manner born.
Right now, he is just hitting tennis balls and having the time of his life. And how long can that go on for?
Like, but that's the thing. That's just what Catherine was saying. That's not how Djokovic operates in this world.
Yeah, it's not how Świątek operates.
Right.
And you saw him. Sorry, David. You barely even remarked upon it, did it? Because we see this sort of thing so often with Alcaraz. But he just, for some reason, wandered into the press room yesterday, wasn't it? Ahead of his match. And he was just greeting all the Spanish journalists.
He just waved at the Spanish press.
He did it with us in Indian Wells. I never met the bloke.
He loves being him.
Yeah.
He loves being
There is not
Carlos
a room Alcaraz. He isn't
and,
comfortable.
And the That's absolute right. contrast to that is Djokovic, who came into this tournament as relaxed and as fit as I've seen him at a Grand Slam in years. And he did his pre-tournament press conference and he was happy and he was relaxed and he was lucid. And then suddenly, and I know it's a world event that had happened and one that matters to him, but he created a moment of tension and stress, which he didn't need to. Okay, it meant an awful lot to him. I understand that. So he wanted to do it. But he admitted, I kind of operate at my most successful when there's a bit of angst going on.
Yeah. He has said that because when he started the PTPA, you know, the player union a couple of years ago,
a statement about Miyu Kato, but the 3 days afterwards.
3 days late and spelt her doubles partner's name wrong.
But he said...
let's not quibble.
In type so small it was practically illegible.
But he...
Yeah, they need a new graphic design.
But Novak says, I complicate my own life. He's not that he's a chaos agent because he likes control, but... And here's the thing. Again, we're talking about this young kid who's got talent leaking out his sides in Alcaraz, but... And like so many of us, Novak is older than he's ever been. But I think that's one more reason to think he'll do everything in his power to beat Alcaraz tomorrow and win this thing for the third time.
I mean, in 2 years' time, one of them is an old man. The other one's approaching his peak.
That's right.
So now or never, right, isn't it?
Are we going to do 20 minutes preview of Zverev Ruud?
Oh, wow.
I didn't come for that. I came for the beer. I came for the beer and the babes. That's it. All right.
Who's winning Zverev Ruud?
I think Zverev, right? I mean, considering that he left that court in pain just a year ago. I don't know. I was very impressed by the way. I didn't see all of it, frankly, last night. But from what I saw of Ruud, I was pretty impressed with the way he finished off that match.
We always underestimate
him. It was a very physical match.
Yeah, we underestimate him.
I underestimate him all the time.
Mm.
Yeah. I thought
we called him very good, and we said
and
well
solid.
Played.
How many
solids?
So, like, yeah,
we said well done.
If he were an Airbnb, where would
be clean? Everything would work.
Yeah, spotless,
right.
Spotless.
Yeah, yeah. Well maintained.
Yeah, pleasant.
Enough sets of cutlery.
Yeah. Exactly right. All right, the pillows could have been better.
We've only got Mary tonight. Who's going to win Mukova and Świątek?
I got to think Iga. Again, only because Mookie looked a little dinged up at the end of that thing.
No.
But I have no problem watching. So many women have won their first major here.
Who are you thinking?
Chrissy, Yvonne. I mean, you go back to, and obviously, I mean, so Halep, they, so many players have had their Grand Slam breakthroughs here. I have no problem watching Mookie win it. But I love how earnest Iga is. I love how much it means to her to have given all of herself to this effort, to her life.
If it's not here for Mukova, do you think it'll be somewhere else?
Do I think she has a major in her?
Yeah.
I would love to think so. I would love to think so.
Is it all about the body?
It has been so far, I think. You know, I read something about her before this match. It sounds like she was pretty small, and then she had this big growth spurt at 16, and it screwed up her back and it screwed up her knees. Oh, wow. And the Czech Federation stopped giving her money because she wasn't playing junior tennis, and she had to scrounge up money from, you know, and she had, I mean, there are all kinds of, her backstory, I think, is really interesting that, you know, she was very hurt by the fact that the Czechs stopped believing her, the Czech Republic, and she had to come back, and again, she's been dinged up, and so she's come through it.
That's a very figure skatery story
it's
as well.
So, I mean, yeah. Exactly right.
And we got Ravel's Bolero playing in the background, well, yeah. Which just fits.
Yeah, no, so...
He can't pick a Taylor Swift song.
I saw Tove Lundin live.
Ravel's Bolero, he's all over it.
My mum is the only sporting event she's ever woken up in the middle of the night for was Ravel's Bolero, Tove Lundin, so I woke up with
Carmen
her.
Too, Catherine.
I do. Mm.
That's a big...
Tomina Burana. I skated to that once. Anyway.
Do I think Mukova can win a major? I would love to say yes to
that's
that.
That's not a yes, though, is it?
I would I just love her so much.
Her game's perfect for grass,
isn't
it?
It's lovely. It's just so pretty.
Somebody with that timing.
But pretty doesn't always get you on the podium.
Oh,
you know?
It's going to be a fascinating test case, really.
I want to say yes.
How have you found the French Open as a whole?
I love this joint. I love it. I love clay. I love all the problems it poses. I love how fit you've got to be in every way. I think there's been some... The Bolero, it really is funny.
I told you, I could pick that out.
I'll tell you what, you don't get that in Flushing. I'll tell you that much. You don't get that in Queens.
You do get Taylor Swift, though, so it swings and roundabouts.
I don't know. I don't know about you. I think, and I just think it's a magnificent tournament. It's beautifully done. There have been some really good matches. I've watched some of the juniors as well. And again, the storylines in the doubles, in the mixed. I mean, come on. It's not like it's, you know, you people have plenty to talk about. I'm glad you have a podcast.
Me too.
I really do.
Does the... Look, we love it too. We do absolutely love it for all sorts of reasons. But there are certain the scheduling has been it's been a weight on us. This fortnight, we felt very, and I think part of that is we've been requesting an interview with Amélie Mauresmo. We're still hopeful
to
get one.
Give you the shame.
We remain hopeful, but we haven't got one yet. She hasn't come in for a press conference. Apparently, she's not doing one this year. I think. I don't want to speak for Matt and David, but I feel a lot of... Mm. It feels very sort of internalised because we're not able to get her views on it and, you know, it's
But is she a figurehead, basically? Do we think she's really deciding who plays night matches around here? How much of a voice does she have?
I'd like to... Well, I mean, not that she would tell us in an interview. I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
It falls on you, right, as the tournament director?
I don't know. I mean, you look at former players who are tournament directors.
Don't sign up to it if you can't make decisions.
Does Feliciano Lopez, did he decide what happened in that? James Blake, does he really get to decide Miami or does IMG? You know what I mean?
I just feel like then if they're going to take the position and be called a title, they need to be judged by it, even if they don't have the power.
Okay.
Because they're getting the money. You know, they're getting the credit, and I respect them and I like those people. But, you know...
I'm just not sure she's the last word. I'm not even sure she's the first word.
I guess my question is, regardless of whose responsibility it is, does it weigh you down?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff has been burdensome at this tournament, especially all the stuff with Ukraine and watching these, you know, the no handshake stuff and all of that. The night matches. I still don't think it's a great idea to have only one night match. In a night, as you said, it's not a session.
Yeah,
we
appreciate you not
It is not a
it's
session.
A match.
It's a match.
The session is like stands for something more than one match.
Right. And,
yes.
and
I would not pay for a night match if it was a night session if it only meant night match.
And if you are a women's match and you play well, you get bollocked for winning too easily and it'd be over in 50 minutes. That's not on.
Yeah, I think that's got to change more than, you know, and then there would be a women's match. Honestly, if all you do is change it from one night match to two night matches, one of them will be a woman. I mean, this is not, I mean, you don't have to rub too many brain cells together.
There is also
a
doubles tournament going on as well, which they could utilize, and a mixed doubles. Oh, and look at that. They've got legends as well if they need to put that on and fill some time. It's not that hard.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
It's not hard, is it?
It's not hard.
But it's disappointing.
There are 3 days left. We will keep pushing.
Wait, there are no more night matches, are there?
No, I mean, here we are
pushing
at 10:34 p.m.
Yeah, drinking beer at Roland Garros.
We will keep pushing for our interview to get answers.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. We'll keep pushing for answers and debate.
Yeah, let me get back to me on that one, okay?
Yeah. We'll let you know. So, tomorrow, we start on Philippe Chatrier with the women's wheelchair doubles semifinals, which is great to see the top seeds Camigi and Montagne against Deroulede and Emmanuel Moch. Not entirely sure I'm getting that pronunciation right, but fingers crossed, hoping so. Great to see that match on Chatrier. Then, as we thought, the first of the men's single semi-finals will be Carlos Alcaraz and Novak Djokovic. Thoughts and prayers to everybody with tickets for the second.
Yeah, but they had to put that match there because those guys played at night. Right? I mean, Rude played till what time the other just last night? They had to give him the second match.
Mm.
Right?
Separate tickets for the two matches.
Don't
though.
Get me going. don't let me
commence.
We are
literally
Catherine.
Here to get you going.
Oh, it takes the smallest little shrimp fork to get me going.
Okay,
especially
well,
after two beers.
Here's one of those.
I just don't get it. Why are you
money.
Doing that?
Money.
Ah,
money. Should we go into the Live PGA merger?
Oh please,
man.
No.
I've got thoughts about that too.
So that is the second men's single semi-final, Rude against Zverev, not before 5:30 local time. Over on Suzanne Longland Court, we have women's legends. They're doing a whole kind of mix and match thing.
I like that.
Deshi and Golovin against Davenport, Hantikova, Bruguera and Villander against Barami Clemel. Where's your buddy John McEnroe in all of this?
He was only supposed to play twice, so he might be done.
He played with Michael Chang
played
today.
Today, yeah.
They had didn't, match point.
He didn't look very happy
he did
about
not
it.
Win it. So. And then he comes up to the booth to call. Yeah, that's always fun. I go, all right, what are we dealing with here? He was actually not as cranky as he could have been. I've told you, wait, can I just quickly tell that story? A couple of years ago, John lost a Legends match. It was with Michael Chang as well. And they play it on Court Susie, and a lot of people come in and watch it. Anyway, but it went right up against our airtime. Oh, and so John was still in his, he was still in his whites, as like his clothes, tennis clothes, as he came up to the booth, and he was not happy. To say the least. Anyway, so he calls his agent and says, he didn't have a suit. He didn't have, you know, we had to be on air in a couple of minutes. And he was still in his tennis clothing. And he's talking to his agent, and I mean, there's nothing better than a cranky McEnroe talking to his agent right before air, and he said, "Yeah, I have my suit. It's in the locker room." And then you could tell that his agent said, "Well, where is your locker?" And he said, "Just it's by the locker with the broken rackets." And sure enough, just a few minutes later, he had a suit on. He was a little sweaty, but his suit was on. My hand to God, that's a true story.
Yeah. Oh, I follow the broken rackets. Don't just believe that.
I love sitting next to John McEnroe. Oh, man.
And you'll get to do it this weekend?
And I'll do it again next three more days.
You'll get to do it for Alcaraz Djokovic?
Well, we'll come on when it's already begun, but yes.
Who does he think is going to win?
I don't know.
I wonder.
I don't know. I haven't asked him.
I'm fascinated.
I don't know. I think the betting line is Alcaraz, right?
He's quite a strong favorite.
A strong betting line, yeah.
I was surprised by how strong a favorite he seems to be.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's going to be so interesting.
One last interruption.
Please.
Of events. Have you ever been to Indian Wells, Mary?
I love Indian Wells. Go ahead. Are you going to give your... Mm. Go ahead. Go big on Indian Wells.
People should go to Indian Wells, shouldn't they?
It should be the law. But go ahead. Read your thing.
The Tennis Podcast throughout Roland Garros is brought to you in association with On Location 123, the premium hospitality and experience provider. Thank you very much, David. On Location is the official tour operator of the BNP Paribas Open at Indian Wells in March, and their packages via Steve Vogel's International Tennis Tours for 2024. In Indian Wells are on sale now. If you'd like to go in style, it's really the only way to go and experience one of the most spectacular settings to watch professional tennis, staying in 4 or 5 star accommodation, great tickets to watch the tennis, and access to a hospitality suite to relax in between matches. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast, toursfortennis.com/podcast, and go to the Welcome to Paradise section.
Yeah.
Very nice. There's not a golf package you guys have cooked up yet for Indian Wells?
We'd
be up for it.
Why haven't we?
Look, putting it out there to the universe,
left and right,
we're up for it.
All right.
The new whatever the tour is going to be called,
we draw the line at that.
No, okay, who knows?
We have standards. They're low, but we have them.
Correct.
Three special people are going to get Mary Carrillo shout-outs tonight. Shall we march inexorably towards that destination?
Do that.
Before we get there, I'm going to tell you that Phoebe is our lovely mascot.
I've seen photos.
Phoebe
she's a joy.
She's most excellent.
She is outstanding. As is Billie Jean. Canine. Oh God, I'm getting my Billie Jeans mixed up.
Human's quite good too. Don't worry.
Human sponsors Canine. Billie Jean King, the human, and Alana Gloss
also
sponsor
human.
Billie Jean Canine, who is currently with her grandparents, having been deposited there by my brother and Millie. Hello, Billie Jean. We have our executive producers, Jamie, Hannah, and Drew.
Correct.
They are top folks. Thank you very much to all of them. We have our mascots.
Yeah, I know. Maisie, Xenia. We all went Sabalenka in 3, didn't we? She was like 1.1.
Wait, where did Reggie? Where did Reggie go?
Reggie said, "I'm going with my head."
Oh no.
Hadad Mar in 3. That guy.
We are.
I love the merriness about Reggie.
Has he made an Alcaraz Djokovic prediction yet?
Yes.
Whatever it is, I'm going the other way.
Oh, that's bad news for you, man.
We're not telling you. It's in the newsletter.
That's true. Well, I can tell you he's gone for the same person that Mary's gone for, but you'll have to sign up to the newsletter to find out how many sets.
You are a genius, Matt Roberts. Marketing genius.
You should do this stuff. You're better at this. I'm bad at the promos, man. We have shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, the special Mary Carrillo edition of shout-outs. First up is Guillermo del Angel.
Oh.
And we know Guillermo. He was a predictions participant a couple of years ago. Lovely Guillermo.
Yes,
probably.
Almost certainly.
He says, "I've been a tennis fan since the age of 6. I watched the 1980 Borg-McEnroe Wimbledon final and was hooked ever since."
Mm. Wow. I can almost imagine him being named after Guillermo Vilas.
He could have been. That's his
fan. Wow.
I hope that Guillermo's in, what would it be, 30, 40 years' time will be saying, "I watched the Djokovic Alcaraz French Open semi-final and I've been hooked ever since."
Mm.
Yeah, that's a nice thought. I like
it. Or the Mukova Sabalenka semi-final.
Or the Rude Zverev.
That's right. Maybe.
Who could say?
Who knows?
We've also got Thomas Woody, who is in Chicago.
Like the Woodies.
Like the Woodies.
Or like Thomas Enquist.
There we go. Very good.
Chicago's where Taylor Swift is performing at the moment.
Is it?
Mm.
Okay. Thanks, Thomas.
Look, if you've got an alternative Chicago fact, David, I'm all ears.
I don't have any Taylor
Thomas
Swift
is all ears.
Facts at
no,
all.
No, Chicago facts.
Right, okay. Chicago Bulls that I used to support in the early 90s when Michael Jordan played for them with Scottie Pippen and various others.
How many times have you confused Taylor Fritz with Taylor Swift?
Oh, well, I haven't done it recently, but there was a period there where it was interchangeable. Totally interchangeable. It was very much a...
I loved it.
Oh, God, what's his name? The your country music guy.
Blake Shelton.
It was very much a Blake Ben Shelton situation.
I heard that one too, yes.
Okay.
I've listened to too many of your podcasts, clearly. All right, what's the other one?
Finally, we've got Kristen Webb, who is from Arkansas.
Oh, there we go.
All right, Kristen.
Kristen Kemmer Shaw. Played in my day. Do you remember that name?
Oh, we Kristen chose the Kemmer? Right day to have Mary on, didn't we? Because I had zero Kristens in my head.
Kristen Kemmer Shaw. She was good.
Wow.
She was good. A good friend of Chrissy's.
Fantastic.
There we go. I know.
Arkansas, home of the Clintons.
Correct.
And I'm sure some tennis players at some point, but none that I'm aware of.
Right.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you, Kristen, for being a friend of the Tennis Podcast, you legend.
Thank you to all our friends of the Tennis Podcast. If you'd like to become a friend, the link to do that, as always, is in our show notes. You can still grab yourself a shout out or an intro. The link to subscribe to the newsletter, where you can get the full pre-teased Reggie prediction, is also in our show notes.
Can I back off of my prediction? That joke. Oh, man, I'm really feeling a little queasy about my pick now.
He got one right this week.
I know, that was tragic.
It was, wasn't it?
Oh, it was terrible.
Very much accidental.
There was a story. Anyway, right, Mary, thank you ever so much for being here.
I love your company. I really do. I love your pod. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Well, the feeling is very much mutual. Here. We'll be back tomorrow without Mary. Please listen anyway. See, I'm no good at the hard sell. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Come on, Reggie.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.